101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty, Scott Hughes in for Erin. She's doing great, by the way. Scheduled to be back later this week, although she is working at home. We hear from her.
We will.
But on a textual message.
I think she's got to come back and do her day job in order to go to the state fair this weekend. So.
She says so. She's doing great. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, our dear friend Scott McKay joining us from the Hayride. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Well, we're doing well. Thank you very much. I wanted to kind of touch base with you about we've just never seen an era like we're experiencing right now. The political divide has never been greater in this country. And when you look at the news, like the No Kings rally that had 7 million people participate.
Yeah,
right.
Not quite.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, the pushback on the ICE raids. I know the reason for that. But, Scott, is this real dissension or is this actually organized, paid political theater?
And I think the way I would answer that is to bring up something else, which is these people going utterly ballistic over a renovation project at the White House. Right?
No president's ever renovated the White House before.
No, absolutely not. And if you've ever been, you know, taken the tour and been to that building, like the east wing of the White House is a long corridor and then like a office complex that's barely used. Like that's the east wing. The east room.
They said the first lady's had offices there, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like it's not an important part of the White House. It was kind of a throwaway thing. The west wing is a big deal. The east wing is not. And every time they would do a big state dinner or something at the White House, they'd put a big tent on the South Lawn,
right?
Which is expensive as hell and also not all that safe given, the threats that increasingly you have to the president and to the White House itself.
Well, and then they set up, good grief, Scott, they set up porta potties. You've got these dignitaries coming in from around the world, and they have to go use a porta potty.
You needed an event facility at the White House. What you had currently, you could put maybe 200 people in it. Okay, this thing's going to put 650, 700. It like this has needed to be done for a long time. Okay, like the last five presidents had all kind of complained, like, well, we really need to do, have a ballroom because we can't do this on the White House grounds. And so Trump comes along and says, oh, okay, and he raises $300 million and puts it together. The architecture of the East ballroom that's going to go up is identical to the rest of the White House. Okay, so like he's not putting some steel and glass monstrosity next to it. It's going to look like the rest of the White House. This is an inoffensive project. And yet, everyone on the left has lost their mind over it. Eric Swalwell, who is just about the stupidest member of Congress.
Yes.
This guy is, I've never seen anybody so obnoxious as this guy. He says, well, when we're running people for president in 2028, they need to all take a pledge that they're going to demolish whatever is built in the East Wing. What? Like, really? Now, how much of this is performative? 99.6%. Okay, like it's very obvious that this is the case. But the fact that they would go to these lengths will tell you just how utterly unhinged these people are and how psychotic the left has become. When you can't do something so I'm not going to call it mundane, because hopefully this ballroom is fantastic and everybody can really be proud of it, but like this is nonpartisan. I mean, this is an unalloyed good thing that Trump is doing, and he's doing it without taxpayer dollars. When Obama at the White House, and I think we like put up a basketball court, he spent something like $360 million of taxpayer money, and nobody complained.
And all we got basically was a basketball court.
I mean, you know, they made some things nicer, and it was more of a renovation than a remodel. And Trump is doing something that, you know, will benefit future presidents of both parties, and they can't hold it together for 2 seconds. So it should tell you, I think that the Trump derangement syndrome is primarily affecting their voters, but their politicians are playing to it rather than trying to reel these people back to the middle. And that's a bad sign, because what it indicates is we're rapidly becoming two different countries under one roof. And, that leads to very bad, very bad places.
Well, Scott, good morning. This is Scott Hughes. Moving back to Louisiana, speaking of things changing, the governor called the legislature into special session. They seem to be, the best I could tell so far, bent on moving the federal election cycle closed for now 1 month. What do you see in that? I keep looking at that going, the Supreme Court may not rule till June. Is all this also political theater, or is this actually going to achieve anything unless the Supreme Court announces that decision in a rare non-final judgment?
Well, I think the way this is set up is to avoid, I'm not a lawyer, so I want to be very
neither am I, Scott. Neither Scott's a lawyer on this show.
That's Scott's favorite saying.
Yeah, there's a Supreme Court decision called Purcell, the ruling of which is that the courts will not get involved in meddling with elections. So in other words,
inside a certain cycle. Yeah,
that's exactly right. Like, in other words, they don't want to screw up the timeline of an election.
And the filing is set for January right now, and the current bills would move it back to February or March, is my layman's understanding.
Yeah, that's essentially it. And so they're trying to set it up so that the Supreme Court doesn't have a Purcell situation if they give us an early ruling on the Calais case.
In your opinion, let's assume they don't, because I personally don't believe the court's going to put this judgment out until they normally do in June,
right,
like they did this last year. And if the legislature does what they're doing, that's not going to actually change anything unless that judgment comes out prior to January. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, but the thing is that they're going to go in a regular session next spring, so they'll have
be
another
in
bite
session.
At the
time. But at that point, they we'd already had the filed candidates. What have you heard, Matt? Because I've heard some behind the scenes, quite frankly, on the Republican side, that there are some. I'm not going to put any names in this conversation that are open to moving back to the jungle open primary for this one cycle in anticipation of a June decision. Thus, they could actually have the election in November, December, as always, and that would let them change the districts in summer. Have you heard that hall talk?
Well, this is what Cameron Henry wants to do, who is the Senate president, because he is a Bill Cassidy ally. And this is all Cassidy's. This is what Cassidy's trying to do, because he knows that if he's in a closed party primary,
a little tougher sledding,
with a runoff, he's going to lose, whether it's to Blake Miguez or, you know, Julie Emerson or John Fleming or whoever makes that runoff with him is going to beat him. He can't get to 50. And so rigging this thing so that he's in a general election, open, you know, jungle primary situation is that's the only calculus by which Cassidy can actually get reelected. And so he has his allies in the legislature. And I don't think there's a majority in the legislature who's willing to be his allies.
Yeah, I don't sense it either, but it's also the only calculus, I think, where they could change those congressional seats for the next cycle. So it's an interesting, you know, standoff.
Yeah, well, I'm not willing to go there because it's...
You're still thinking they can come out before June.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, this was a case that was already litigated from the standpoint of whether the current map violates equal protection. So this it got punted to this current Supreme Court term so that they could talk about Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. So they have, like, you know, half of the Supreme Court decision that would come down in Calais is I mean, I don't know if it's already written, but it's already been debated, and they know all the issues, and probably the clerks have already done their briefs on all of that. So, this is not the same thing as a de novo case the Supreme Court, you know, is hearing right now. They can probably turn it over quicker. And the Supreme Court people know, I think Texas is December 8th. Is they're qualifying. Mm-hmm. So, like, they know that they're like, okay, we're going to have a Purcell situation in Texas if we don't turn this around fast. They actually could, in the next week or so, pop this decision out. And if they do, then, wow, you know, you can do a map and everything else. Now, that's not to say that they will. You know, we don't know.
Matt's sounding like a lawyer now to me, Mike.
Yeah, right. Well, and what I will say, and I have been screaming this since August, is... and the session's call will allow for this. I really would like it if somebody would go pop a map out there in this session and file a bill and say, this is contingent on the Supreme Court either throwing out Louisiana's current map as a violation of equal protection, or if they get rid of or substantially alter Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, this map is our new map. And it's a big deal. They had a map that pretty much everybody was okay with back in 2021, I guess, when they redistricted this thing.
And I'm surprised as well, Scott. I expected some maps to be dropped too. And I think Mike wants to jump in.
Yeah, Scott, we got to take a real quick break. Can you hang with us? And we'll be back.
Yeah.
We got Scott McKay on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Scott Hughes in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Key.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Scott McKay from the Hayride on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Scott Hughes in for Aaron. Scott, I want to go back to this. The political theater that's going on, these paid protesters, this No Kings rally, they claim there were 7 million people that participated. Yeah. You don't agree with that figure, though.
I think it was more like 700,000, but, you know, whatever, guys. they didn't have 7 million people. And the biggest problem with, you know, whether it was the numbers or whatever, you know, the biggest problem is those were not mainstream Americans. Like, you know,
I don't see a whole lot of people walking around in a big bozo costume or wearing inflatables down the street.
For the sake of argument, I think they are mainstream Americans. My daughter lives on the Boston Common, and there were 300,000 people across the street from her. And I saw pictures. They seem to be pretty mainstream Americans to me. Why is the answer always to attack the crowd and not worry about? I mean, we could argue the 7 million, but I don't think all the people that came out there are crazy people in frog costumes.
So in Fairhope, Alabama, there was a woman who showed up with a no dictator sign and an inflatable costume.
Okay, granted, 6,999,000 to go.
Scott,
I respect your opinion, but I think it's just bad politics. I think you're playing to Mike's question of calling what clearly is millions. Let's forget if it's seven. To call millions of people crazy wackos when I think most of them were common Americans.
They weren't all crazy wackos, but there were a lot of crazy wackos out there.
And that's the point I'm arguing. I don't think they're all crazy wackos. That's the only point I'm arguing right now.
Let me say it this way. The idea of no kings is a crazy wacko idea.
That's a better argument. I'm making an argument, Scott.
We clearly do not have kings in this country.
That's a better argument than calling people wacko.
Clearly not a king. And it is it's a crazy wacko. The other thing that's crazy and wacko is to go to a rally that is sponsored by Communist Party USA and the Democrat Socialists of America. Those are not mainstream organizations. Those are nut job organizations. Okay. So the fact that you had people that are like out in the streets screaming at passing cars, which happened more than in just Fairhope, Alabama, a whole bunch of places where you had this happen. You know, that's not mainstream. That's nuts.
And I understand, I appreciate the conversation. From a political standpoint, though, what does it mean for the country? I think that's Mike's question. That's what I want. That's why I wanted to raise.
Is this real, or is this something?
What does it mean when we see this moving forward? Because this is your area. What does it mean for the midterms? Because I think Mike's point is we have a country that seems to be not getting more united. It seems to be getting more divided. And what does this mean for the coming midterms? That's why I wonder.
Well, I think. The problem that you have, for example, Jeffries just endorsed Zoran Mamdani.
He finally did.
Yeah.
Okay.
That tells you that the Democrat Party is not, its leadership is not attempting to move the party back to the center. Instead, right. It is joining the fringe on the left. Does not help the Democrats in the midterms. The shutdown does not help the Democrats in the midterms.
Scott, I've got a heartbreak here. Can you hold with us? Because I want to continue this.
I appreciate this conversation.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
Scott McKay with the Hayride on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, 101.7 FM, 710.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Going to continue our conversation here. We got to take a quick break. Scott McKay is on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Scott Hughes in studio, and kind of really want to continue this conversation on the upcoming midterms. And are the Democrats hurting themselves? I think so. You don't think so, Scott?
Well, I didn't say they were hurting themselves or not. I'm just trying to understand what the issues are.
We'll find out after the break. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Scott McKay on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. You still with us, Scott?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry. Thank you for hanging on.
It's not a problem.
I appreciate that very much.
This is fascinating, Scott, and I appreciate it. We were on Mondami, and for the record, I don't like Mondami. What I do as an analyst, think he's going to win. I think you might probably agree with that.
Yeah, I think he's going to win because I think New Yorkers had their fill of Cuomo.
And I agree with that.
So he's the lesser of the evils, ironically, in their eyes.
Well, he's the worst of the three options, but he's going to win. Those two things can be true at the same time.
Right, sure.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Why won't Sliwa pull out?
And that's the Republican candidate for those that aren't knowing.
Yeah, if I was up there, I would probably be part of the group asking him to pull out. But if I'm Curtis Sliwa, first of all, there's the way they do matching funds for campaigns in New York. He has a financial incentive not to pull out. So there's that.
Yeah.
And Curtis Sliwa is not like some real estate tycoon who decided to get into politics. Okay, like this guy is... lives in a one bedroom apartment with his cats.
Needs the cats. But would it matter? Would it matter, Scott? Even if he pulls out, I don't think Cuomo beats Mondami.
That's the other piece is that Sliwa can point to polls that show that Cuomo can't beat Mondani. He's already lost in the Democrat primary to Mondani, and he's like, I'm going to represent the Republican Party in this race because. The guy you want me to pull out and endorse can't beat Mamdani anyway. My voters will just stay home. And the thing is, he's not wrong about that. I think the counter that wins the argument, or at least should, is, at least let's have a shot not to elect a communist in New York.
Okay. You bring up that point, Scott McKay. New York is about to elect a communist governor. Mayor.
We all agree on that.
A communist mayor. What does that mean? What does that say on the state of the entire country?
And that's the point I wanted to get to without necessarily calling names. That's a reality in politics that's going to happen. What does that mean, Scott?
Well, okay, and I don't know if you guys saw, there was a poll, and I don't remember who did it, but there was a poll that came out last week, and Mamdani is catching 68% of the vote from foreign-born New Yorkers. Cuomo is actually beating him with native-born American New Yorkers. And New York is...
Well, that's a scary statistic in itself. City.
Yeah.
It's a very international city. That's like a huge demographic, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and so, like, that's where Mamdani is winning this election, is that you've had so much immigration into New York City that it really is not a city reflective of the American public as a whole. You know, and, like, you shouldn't have a city that is like that in this country. And yet, I don't know how many cities you do have, but New York is one of them.
I think New York is in that case. But so backing up to where we started, Hakeem Jeffries, he endorses the candidate who's going to win. What advice would you have given Hakeem? Would you take the Democratic Party not endorsing the guy that's going to be mayor of the largest city in America?
Yes.
Okay.
If he wins without the endorsement, then fine, work with him, whatever. But like, if I was advising Hakeem Jeffries, and there is no chance of that ever happening. But if I was advising Hakeem Jeffries,
I hear they have matching funds in New York, Scott.
my advice would be just like stay away from it, and you know, let
which
people
he tried to
beat
do.
On you about it, but just. Yeah.
Which, for the record, I agree with you, Scott. I'm not shocked that he endorsed him, but I kind of thought they were all going to stay away from him. They were going to just let him get elected without the official endorsement of the party. So that's kind of why I wanted to get into this question, because what does that mean that they felt that they had to endorse this candidate? I don't think that's necessarily a good look for the Democrats, but they're in a lose-lose situation in the New York mayor's race.
Right. And what it tells you is, like, we are very, very far away from, you know, 1992 when Bill Clinton came along and said, I'm a new Democrat and, you know, ran on sort of a centrist platform. Like, you can't get the nomination doing that now. Like, you just can't do it. And so.
Yeah, congratulations, Universe. I miss Bill Clinton. Wow.
Right, exactly. And of course, the Clintons are now caterwauling about the sanctity of the White House, and everybody's like, that's not like saying that. You're in such a situation where, you know, and the guy whose name they threw out was Josh Shapiro. Like, well, okay, this is who they need to nominate in 2028 because he can win. And it's like, Josh Shapiro can't get that nomination now. Like, this is an AOC party.
Right.
Now.
Right. And Ilhan Omar, and, you know, politics.
Yeah. And, you know, and of course, and it kind of throws in with the Calais case. Did you know that Ilhan Omar's district in Minneapolis is 70% white? Did you know that?
I did not know.
It is left wing white people who elected Ilhan Omar.
I actually did, but let's begin with you're in Minnesota. So, you know, they're
that explains
right.
a lot.
But and of course, Keith Ellison, who actually is from New Orleans and went to St. Aug, is the attorney general in Minnesota. Which is an Antifa guy. I mean, like, Keith Ellison is as far left as you get. Like, that's who the Democrats are electing now in places where Democrats are the majority of the state or the city. I mean, it is a party that is not a particularly mainstream party. And
I would agree it's a party that doesn't have a deep bench, Scott. They don't have a deep bench.
But when you control the cultural institutions that sort of decide what is mainstream and what is not, you can move that needle pretty far to the left. I think, you know, they've done that. The problem is those institutions are collapsing. Mainstream news media, you know, the cable news crew other than Fox News and some of these, like, those things don't hold a lot of sway. Particularly in the 18 to 49 or 18 to 55 demo, like, they don't get a lot of viewership. The newspapers have largely collapsed in circulation and so forth. So, like, and even film and TV has largely collapsed as a cultural institution capable of driving the American people's, you know, worldview. And so when you drag your party far to the left and the public has already sort of abandoned that, like, that's a disconnect that I think they're going to start having a real problem with, whether it's in the midterms next year or you get to 2028 and your party nominate somebody like an AOC or I can't see Tim Walz, but you know, somebody of that bent.
Gavin Newsom's the one I think we're going to see. Just I'll go on record
maybe.
And say I think
it's
Gavin.
It could be Newsom, but Newsom's got lots of his own problems as well. So
all they have to do is bring up California. Look at California today.
Well, I mean, if I'm running against Gavin Newsom, I'm gonna hammer on the Pacific Palisades fire nonstop, because the metaphor is he's going to set America on fire. I don't know how they counter that.
Appreciate your comments, Scott. You said something I'm going to back up a second ago, which I agree 100% with. One of my friends in the media told me that one of the I'm going to say problem. I think you understand that, but I think one of the problems we have today is we no longer have a town square. We have a bunch of back alleys, and I think that we no longer have this collective media we used to have, whether it's mainstream or not. And now we have new media. And one thing I think the Republicans did very well, Trump did very well in this last cycle, was they reached out to those 18 to 25 year olds. They reached out to that young voter that has been raised without mainstream media, and they found a way to communicate. And I think the Democrats have not found that way to communicate.
Well, I mean, you know, why would they? They controlled the institutions that had held sway over the American people. So obviously you're going to ride that horse until it drops dead.
And that horse is dead
and
now.
The horse has dropped dead, and it's ready for the glue factory. So,
Scott, in the last minute that we have, just real quick, when you look at if a million people came out during, say, No Kings, but how do you explain Trump winning on a mandate in October? And how are we where we are today? Is it real?
Well, bear in mind, they spent $300 million turning out that, whether it's 700,000, a million, 7 million people. Like, they spent a whole lot of money promoting those rallies. Mm-hmm. Whether it's paid protesters, like, I'm not even going to weigh in on that. When you spend $300 million marketing something, it should generate some results, even if it's like really, you know, really not a good ROI. You're going to get something. Just like if you inject $1 trillion into the U.S. economy with federal spending, you're going to get some economic growth. But, you know, is that long term effect going to be of any great value? I don't see it with the No Kings thing. I think this was supposed to generate a giant public outcry against the Trump administration and scare the Republicans into caving on the terms of the shutdown, and it didn't. And the American people don't really seem all that moved by the shutdown right now, which is not where the Democrats want to be.
Right.
And whatever they say, notwithstanding.
And I wanted to get to that as well, but unfortunately. Scott, thank you so much. I didn't intend to go on this long, but I appreciate you staying with us and your input.
Scott, I appreciate the conversation. Well, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Anytime, guys.
And we'll talk to you again soon. Scott McKay with the Hayride. Scott Hughes in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McKay.
To the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
FM, 710 Keel. Thank you to Scott. I didn't intend on him staying the whole hour, but appreciate his insight and always interesting. Coming up after the news top of the hour, by the way, I've got Shea Wilkes going to be joining us on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Shea is an Army veteran, works for the VA Medical Center. You might remember that name. He was the whistleblower. I mean, going back to 2014, I think. And we're going to do some follow-up. Right now, Jeff Luce is in, Aaron out today and tomorrow. She'll be back on Thursday. You just got back in town.
I did, yeah.
You were on a big cruise.
On a cruise. We got off yesterday. So, yeah.
Where'd you go? I mean, that's...
Well...
You sent some pictures, and I was like, Okay. I'm kind of wanting to maybe think about wanting to. I don't know that I could get my wife on one, though.
I'm telling you, you will love it. The boat went to Cozumel and to Progreso. So it was a really short cruise.
Where? Cozumel and where?
Progreso. It's
the soup company?
You did a yes, tour. Right. It was delicious.
Yeah.
But I did not get off the boat on that particular day because when we were in Cozumel, for the very first time ever in almost 30 cruises, I got sick. And it's your fault, Mike Martindale. I'm telling you.
Wait a minute.
I've never gotten sick on one of these things.
Not motion sickness.
No. Actually, it turned out to be food poisoning. And it wasn't from the cruise. It was from being in Mexico. So I got a little cavalier with what I ate. And so I spent, as the boat went to Progreso, I just stayed on the boat. I did not get off the boat that day because I was sick in the room the whole time.
A little upset stomach.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I think all of these times you blamed Aaron for going on the cruises, it was your fault. It is always
my fault, right?
Right. The reason that she's gotten sick is because you brought it on her. So I had never gotten sick, and then right before this cruise, you asked me if I ever had.
Right.
And I said, no, never, no big deal. Sure enough.
Are you cursing me in the room? Are you really?
I'm in the medical center going, Mike Martindale.
This is all his fault.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry you got sick.
It was 24-hour kind of thing that was pretty quick. And so,
oh, well, but, good.
I did get to meet the medical staff. And man, what a rough job they have. Because I'm literally the only person in there being treated for anything. And the doctor has...
Okay, well, that's got to be good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it was. But their schedule, they are open on that particular day. They were open from 8 to 10 in the morning and then from 4 to 6 in the afternoon. That's it. The whole medical center's closed.
So at 2 in the afternoon, if you get sick or you cut your thumb off, just out of luck.
Well, they do have 911. You just hold it on there for a couple of hours. You'll be fine.
They're going to open it, too. I got to wait a little while.
So all of 4 hours a day. Is that not a great job for a doctor?
On a cruise ship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was. We had a great time and went with six of our couple friends. And so we did. We had a great trip.
Good. Well, glad you made it back safely.
Yeah. And so you and Dana have to join us next time.
Uh-huh. See? Now, Mexico, she'd be all in.
Yeah.
She'd be all in.
And, you know, Cozumel is it's such a great place to visit. I mean, and it's so easy. And I always bill it as it's the one time that, where you can go on vacation to a foreign country and take your hotel with you.
Right.
And so it's just it's so easy because you just get off. Get back on, find that you're in a new place.
Shay Wilkes going to join us coming up after the news, top of the hour. VA, give us a VA Medical Center update. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. FM 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty, Aaron off. She will be back day after tomorrow. Scheduled to be back. Jeff Luce in studio and on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Army veteran Shay Wilkes. Shay, you're captain, right?
Yes, that was my ring when I got out.
Okay, so retired, but you still work for the VA Medical Center.
I do, yes.
As a patient advocate, tell me exactly what your title is.
I'm a clinical social worker by profession. I work with the military to VA transition care team. We kind of work with veterans that are coming off active duty, whether medical retire, just leaving the military and kind of transitioning from military care to VA care. So we help them with that transition. Make it go smoothly.
Okay. Now, Shay, let's go back. I think it goes back to, is it 2014 when you first kind of became involved?
Well, you know, what's funny is that's when waitlist scandal started. So technically, yeah, but I actually reported waitlist to the Office of Inspector General at our facility 1 year prior to Phoenix even coming out. I guess that was the big news break was Phoenix and their waitlist. But I had already reported it a year before at our facility to the IG, and then I kind of tagged on to that with my reports, and I was like, hey, I already reported this, and then it kind of took off from there.
And now for those that don't remember or aren't familiar with the waitlist scandal, give us a little bit of background on what that was. I know veterans were waiting inordinate amount of time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, months, 6, 7, 8 months, even longer at times. And the numbers were showing everything was great, that they weren't waiting. And, you know, it just wasn't true. So the wait list was one way that the organization as a whole in VA, and they were doing it everywhere, had developed to kind of hide it. So, you know, instead of putting it in the actual numbers, there was one electronic wait list online that showed zero wait time. And but they had little paper lists that they were using, and there are different ways that they were manipulating the numbers. Our system, our scheduling system at the time called Vista, you could go in and out, and there were little glitches in there that you could make it show zero wait times and things like that when actually the wait times were much longer. And you had people, depending on what their medical condition was, you know, that were dying waiting on appointments and stuff. And, you know, anytime you wait, especially for something like mental health, and what we do as working with veterans, especially at a time of combat, you know, that's just not a good thing. So.
Now, you said veterans were literally dying waiting on appointments.
Yes, yes. And that's what broke it big into the story, like in Phoenix and stuff. So, you know, I mean, obviously some medical things are very important, and time is very crucial in those, whether it's cancer or some cardiac things like that. And, you know, and that's where it was. They weren't reading results and stuff. If you look at a lot of the IG reports and stuff like that, that's what was happening. And you know, the problem with it all, and the problem that still we see today, is the VA never admits anything. They never admit anything. Obviously, they attack me. I don't know, probably people. Usually the messenger in the VA system gets attacked and they get shunned. I just happen to survive because, you know, I don't back down. And if anybody knows me, they know my personality. And I'm like, hey, I'm here.
I know you. That's why I laugh, Shay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a veteran advocate. It's not about Shay Wilkes. And you know, that's why I always keep it about the veteran, and it's not about me. And then if you keep it about the veteran and trying to get what's right for the veteran, then you can last. It's a tough fight with this organization. It's a it's the largest gorilla that I've ever taken on in my life. And you know, they can come after you in many different ways.
That had to take a lot of courage to be able to do this. That, I mean, as you were going through this, I mean, what was the hardest, like, personal or professional consequence that you faced in this?
Well, I'll never get promoted. I'll never have opportunities. Mm-hmm. I knew that going in. You know, it's something that you get shunned. One thing I've taken out of it, though, where a lot of people that do it, or a lot of people don't do it because they're scared. And this is an organization that has the backing. I mean, this is federal government, man. I mean, I was put under false investigations. I mean, they had me, you know, they were investigating me for having a wait list that didn't exist. One of my lawyers said, hold on, you're investigating him for having a list that's not even supposed to exist?
Yes. So that doesn't
make, but that's the federal government, man. And, you know, they play by their own rules. I mean, you know, it's like I had an interview with the IG one time, and they recorded the whole thing, but I was telling them how they were manipulating wait times and all that for, I mean, a couple of hours, and then they come back and they tell my lawyer and I, oh, well, the batteries went dead after 5 minutes. Well, of course they did. That's when I was outlining how the government was cheating the numbers. So, you know, it's, man, I could tell you some stories. I thought about writing a book, and I still may one day, so.
We're talking with retired Captain, Army Captain Shea Wilkes with the VAMC here in Shreveport. And the reason that, that we bring this up, Shea, is because there was a new report from the OIG, the Office of Inspector General, that still found multiple deficiencies in patient care at the Overton Brooks VA Medical Center in Shreveport.
Yeah, yeah, that came out summer. The incident happened a while back. I think, you know, I can't tell you exactly, but, you know, it's sad. I mean, it really is sad, and I'll say that. It's sad for the employees that try so hard, but the problem is we're in a system that's outdated. We're in a system that doesn't want to change. We're in a system that fights change. It is the textbook of what we hear as government bureaucracy. Your leadership core, I'll be quite honest with you, and I'm going to be really, I'll say 75%, but it's more than that, of leadership. They couldn't survive outside the system. It's sad. They don't train leaders right. I mean, I've been in these leader programs. But like I said, I was shunned. I knew when I came forward 10 years ago, I never would get any opportunities, anything like that. Now, I do have a strong voice to this day because, you know, I testified in front of the Senate. My case went to, it was President Obama's desk at that time. And you know, so I still do have a strong voice and advocate. But you can't abuse that privilege. So many whistleblowers abuse that privilege and they make it about themselves. And, you know, this is a case, unfortunately, I would like to tell you that it's a single incident, but we see things like this all the time where, you know, is a lot of pass the buck. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen. And then when you bring them up, you just kind of get shunned. And if you're not a strong personality person kind of like me, it's really, there's nothing you can do. It's like, okay, well, you tell your chain of command and they're like, okay, well, this is not a problem. We're great. We know we're great. Pat yourself on the back and we'll move on from it. And you just pass it and pass it. And, you know, it's everything you hear about the government. Honestly, Mike, you know, I was watching All in the Family and Archie Bunker even said it. I mean, this was recently. I was watching a rerun. And he says, oh, they're a civil servant. They're not going to get fired. Yeah. I mean, everybody
and
knows.
And that goes back to the 70s. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Why is that right, Mike? Why is it that you can't get rid of people you need to get rid of?
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
They would get rid of me if they could, I mean, tomorrow.
I don't understand tenure in the college system, so.
Right. None of that makes sense. But you also established the VA Truth Tellers, right?
Yeah, I want to go into that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Shea, hold on just a second. We got to take a break. If you hold on with me, I want to go into that after we take a break. Captain Shea Wilkes on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Jeff Luce in for Aaron, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Now, breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Jeff Luce in for Aaron. Captain Shea Wilkes with the VA Medical Center on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Shea, I want to ask before we move forward. You said this first when you first started with this, it was during the Obama administration. Have you seen a change this year, or have you seen? Are there any improvements since Trump has taken office?
Let me explain to you. This organization outlasts administration.
it doesn't matter who's in office there.
They survive, and they're very crafty at how they do it. Not a lot of people know the inside of how it works and everything, and that's how, including Congress, and Congress has all kinds of trouble getting stuff from them. But you do see changes in administrations, and the new VA secretary we have, he speaks a great game, and I really believe what he's saying. I've been in this, I hate to say fight, but that's what it is, for over a decade. And I know how the whole system kind of works from top to bottom and things like that. And, you know, and that's what kind of scares everybody the most about it. And I have contacts in D.C. and in different places like that. So, you know, I have a pretty strong voice. And I like the way that it's going now because it's focusing on the access, and the Access Act is something you can look at and folks can look at out there, veterans and stuff. And, you know, I know a lot of veterans say they're happy with VA care, and that's fine and everything. But, you know, we don't have a choice as a veteran. I'm 100% veteran, and I can't choose. When I go to the VA, if I use that, now I have private insurance too, which I use now more than I do VA, to be quite honest with you, the VA health care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the VA is just too, I mean, my opinion, I've told people at the highest level this, so it's nothing I'm hiding or anything. I mean, I've told Congress and all of them, I said the VA is long waits for average care at best.
Well, we did get a message, and you said there are those that are happy with the care. We got a message on the Shreveport Security Systems message board that said Overton Brooks leads the country in healthcare access in neurosurgery wait times. And I asked, do you mean leads the country in the longest wait times or the shortest? And he said, no, shortest. We complete results in less than a week from receipt, the best in the country.
I mean, and those are numbers that they come up with, and that may be. But here's the deal. If you believe any numbers that come out of the VA, I mean, you can believe them. But the majority of times, there's just different ways, and you have to get into those to look at them. But, I mean, I don't believe any numbers that come out because I know how they manipulate them, and I see how they manipulate them. I know how they maneuver consults. I know how they clear consults and schedule. I know how they do that. But the key to this is getting it better is, you know, that there's no competition. So when I go to VA, I can't pick my doctors. Mike, you can pick your doctor. You can go through a list on your insurance or whatever it may be, and you pick. I can't. They assign it.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to change, if I want to fire my doctor, I can't. I have to stay with them, or I have to put in a change of provider, which is a joke process. I mean, and they look for every reason, trust me, they look for every reason not to allow you to change the provider.
And when you talk I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then, you know, you just don't get to, I mean, if you go to a provider, if I use my private insurance and I go to a provider and they make me sit here and wait and I don't feel like it's a good fit or whatever, I can go find another one in my list of providers that have opted into that system. You can't at the VA. Why can't I? You know, that's my thing. Why do I have to choose the VA? I'm the one that earned the right to do this or that. Why can't you say, hey, why can't I choose VA or why can't I choose to go outside the VA? I mean, we can sit here. I've argued with these people on their numbers. I don't even allow them to bring their numbers into meetings if they want or even be an argument.
Well, because when
you know, that's fine. Neurology can throw their numbers out there. But I tell you what, let me come in there and break your numbers down and let me see how you're doing it. And let me look at your consults and stuff like that. And they don't want to hear that.
Well, when you're talking about the numbers, I understand why you don't trust them because of the secret wait list. But was the motivation?
Any numbers that come out of the VA are an absolute joke.
What's the motivation?
I've been in this system long enough to know their ways. And I'm not going to get fired up because I'm not arguing with their nonsense anymore. So, you know, I don't have to.
Yeah, what do you feel like is the motivation for them to cover up these numbers? I mean, you know, because there's two sides to this coin.
Because
I mean,
they don't want to work. I mean, you want to get me fired up? I'll tell you right now. You know how many people on the outside, how many providers on the outside see?
My buddy is a
primary care. He says he has to see 30 to 40 to keep the doors open. I can promise you right now, we don't see that. We see 9 or 10, and I see them complain about it.
That's significantly different, yeah. So the
they've even said it in Congress. He said, you know, we don't have a manpower problem. We have an efficiency problem.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm not going to say that's on the providers. That's on a lot of the dumb stuff in the bureaucracy that we have those providers do.
Now,
you
know, Shay,
you watch, but it's not. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Along with the VA Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection, you've also co-founded a new, like Jeff mentioned, a 50-member VA Truth Tellers organization. Tell me about that.
Well, it's kind of devolved. That's how we got things going years ago. There's power in numbers. You know, and we said the VA likes to single you out and attack you. So the way we got things going, and Congress and them even told us this, that we scared everybody because you know, we had like 40 people. We had 40 people saying, hey, we're not lying. This is it. Because you never get the VA to admit anything. They've never admitted that they even had wait lists, honestly. If you go back and look, they won't admit that they do anything wrong. That's it. You'll never, they'll attack you, but they'll never admit anything that they do wrong. Never. And, you know, that's the way that we did it. There's power in numbers and others out there. I try to always tell people when they come to me and say, how do you go about reporting this and that? I said, well, if there's a group of you, you need to do it as a group. Because if they got you individually, they'll rip you apart.
Shay Wilks with the VA Medical Center. Thank you. Look, I appreciate you jumping on talking with us this morning, Shay. And we'll keep up on it.
No problem. They'll be fussing at work today, so that's fine. No problem. Anytime y'all want.
We'll talk to you soon.
I'm up for it. They don't like arguing with me because I know their games and I know how it works, and, you know, I make sense, and they don't like that. So.
Well, hopefully we'll get something changed. Thank you, Shay. Talk to you soon.
I hope so. We're still fighting, man.
All right. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Erin just texted me and she said, look, I just got a text from a friend. She's not even here and they're texting her and getting But this is interesting. She said, this person said, my sister used to be a nurse in an OR. She said the atmosphere at the VA.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm quoting the text. She said the atmosphere was so toxic, it was unreal. Scrub techs were a big problem. She said she could call for a count of, let's say, sponges, and they're required to do that. And bless you. And would absolutely, blatantly refuse to do it. And the doctors would back them. Patients' lives were definitely at risk over things like that. And she swore our dad would never go to the VA for care. They definitely need a massive turnaround of how things operate there.
That's horrifying.
It is. It's sad.
Yeah.
Everybody deserves good health care, but our veterans deserve to be taken care of.
And I know that there's solid people within the VA system who are doing
absolutely
everything they can.
And I'm not trying to trash the individual workers.
Yeah.
The system itself is the problem. And that's why I was asking Shay if with a new administration, has that changed? Unfortunately, it's kind of self-contained and it has not.
Yeah, it just seems to operate outside of all of the system in general. And it sounds like these secret wait lists are one of the ways that they've kept it outside of that system.
Jeff Luce is in for Erin McCarty. Mike and McCarty, Erin will be back on Thursday. Looking forward to having her back. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, Erin's doing great after her procedure. She's actually working from home now. She got a doctor's approval to work from home, and then she'll be coming in back into the studio on Thursday morning. So looking forward to having her back. Jeff Luce in studio for Erin today. Jeff, you just got back from a cruise. So, you're personally, I hold you responsible for us losing our head coach.
You're
an A&M grad.
Just keep in mind the real culprit is the same guy who hired Jimbo Fisher at A&M.
We were talking off mic earlier this morning, and you brought up an interesting statistic: the two highest buyouts
in the history of college football. We're all from the hires of Scott Woodward, who is the LSU's AD, who was previously A&M's AD.
Right. And the first one was Jimbo Fisher.
Jimbo Fisher, yeah. And then now $54 million going to Brian Kelly to just go away. Yeah.
And that's after they paid Ed Orgeron. Millions.
Right.
To sit on the beach.
Yes. And it's pretty rough. And it's just, I mean, honestly, both contracts were pretty ridiculous. I mean, they were just kind of over the top.
Are you kidding me? A 10-year, $10 billion contract? I mean, it wasn't that.
You're right, right. $100 million, though. Yeah, so. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Might as well have been $10 billion.
Yeah.
$100 million contract.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Brian Kelly's was actually $95 million, but, you know, give or take $5 million.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's a whole
friends.
Different world.
Yes.
Gosh.
It's crazy money. And the thing is it's like, you know, I hopefully they will do the same thing A&M did and will, you know, kind of rein it in some. I mean, obviously, don't get me wrong.
But you got to hire.
You do.
And that's the market now.
Correct.
Because you've established that precedent.
But I think that in both hires, it was all for the big name splash and not really for the coaching abilities. I mean, Jimbo was past his prime when he came to A&M, and Brian Kelly, you know, he was doing fine at Notre Dame, but he was probably not going to last long there either. And so
Brian Kelly did bring a certain pedigree.
He did. Yeah, he brought the splash.
And if you look at statistics, if you look at his record, you go, "Really? He got fired?"
Right. Well, yeah.
But then look at where the program is right now.
It's a whole different game than SEC. Now, why Brian Kelly ever left Notre Dame, and again, for any school, is just crazy. I mean, I am no Notre Dame fan at all, but at the same time, it's one of the cushiest, you know, high-profile college jobs that there is. I mean, you get you really just have to schedule 2 hard games and 10 cakewalks, and and you're going to make the national championship and make millions of dollars, you know? So just so happens Marcus Freeman lost the first 2 this year that were his hard ones, but he'll cakewalk through the rest of the schedule.
Right.
So, and we'll probably be in a playoff picture. So, yeah, it's interesting. But, yeah, so Scott Woodward, you know, I mean, he's an LSU grad, and so that was.
I haven't kept up with the AD position. Is there any discussion on his future?
You know, there's been a little bit of post about it, but you also have to remember he's done some good stuff outside of football. I mean, he hired Kim Mulkey, which, man, what a great hire that was. I mean,
now who is she?
Yeah. Don't you hate that Tech missed out on having her? I mean, you know, I just, that would have been such a good thing.
Well, and when she won a championship after her 3rd year?
Yes. Absolutely.
And then everybody was looking at Brian Kelly going, okay, you're going into your 3rd year.
Right, yeah, it's time. Right, yeah. Well, and Woodward,
and those are the expectations at LSU, though.
Correct.
Seriously.
Right, and he made great hires in baseball. He did the same thing at A&M, though, you know, the coach he hired for us for baseball at A&M ends up leaving to go to Texas, which, you know, for an A&M fan is the worst thing in the world, you know. But but again, you know, he has made some great hires outside of football. He just negotiates some terrible contracts. So, but one I would love to have.
No kidding.
Right.
No kidding.
Fire me after year one. I'm good.
I saw Lane Kiffin was like top of the list as far as replacements.
And that would be an interesting call. I mean.
Oh, there you go. Interesting.
Yeah. Lane Kiffin's always interesting. He is entertaining, if nothing else. And he really does get I wouldn't want to hang out with him as a person, you know, but like as far as a coach, he really is. He gets the most out of the talent that he's been given.
Would you like to see Nick Saban come out of retirement?
I so enjoy him on ESPN Game Day. I would miss that. So yeah,
a lot of LSU fans hate Nick Saban.
Yeah,
but he did not leave LSU to go to Alabama.
Yeah, he went to the NFL and was terrible.
And when passed on Drew Brees.
Yeah,
that's his legacy in the NFL.
Yeah. So, but. And watching him sit by Pat McAfee on the, you know, on ESPN Game Day
I can't stand Pat McAfee.
Yeah, he's a piece of work, but it's funny watching Saban react to him, you know, just like.
Especially the first year when he was there.
Yes.
He didn't know what to do.
No, it's great. So.
Coming up after the news, top of the hour, Dr. Jeffrey Saddo from LSUS going to join us, talking about the Louisiana legislature voting to move elections back a month. Good idea. Waiting on the U.S. Supreme Court decision. Is that forthcoming anytime soon? We'll hear what he has to say. Top of the hour, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel, and on the free Kiel app.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Kiel.
.1017 FM, 710 Kiel. Jeff Luce is in for Aaron today. You'll be in tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you.
We were talking off mic, and I'm. This is just heartbreaking to me. The shooting that took place, or that down in the Riverfront District.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I so want that to work.
We've been talking about that. We've been talking about that for weeks now. Mm-hmm. We had Cedric Glover, Downtown Development Authority director, in studio. Mm-hmm. And how can we get people down? How can we get businesses back into that area? Mm-hmm. How can we revitalize that? And I mentioned safety is going to be key.
It is.
And then you have, now I understand this wasn't a random carjacking or something. It wasn't a random, this was obviously these people knew each other and got in a fight.
Right.
And it went south very, very quickly, but it's just heartbreaking.
It's that kind of thing. I mean, it's those things that really, even these random stories that really are one-offs, but they still put this dark spot on that area. I mean, I work, you know, I've got an office a couple of blocks away from that. And so I'm downtown. I feel totally safe. I've been down there since I was 13. Mm-hmm.
Your family has a business and you still own the building.
Correct. There. Yeah. But people don't realize if all you ever hear are those kind of things going on, even if they are one-offs that are random, it really pushes people away from downtown. And downtown is a beautiful place. I love downtown.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too.
And if you really look at the history on some of those buildings, which, you know, the guys have been in to talk about, there's some really just great places down there. And I would love for the Riverfront to work, to be a great place for shopping. And
I'm hoping with the recent investment by Curtis Jackson
in a lot of
downtown properties and let's get the film project, TV projects going. Let's get some positive action going.
That's right. Yeah.
And start filling up some of those businesses and buildings.
Right.
But then here we are talking about another shooting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just unfortunately colors it in a horrible light.
Because I think Cedric even mentioned last week that, you know, if we increase the security down there to be able to get, you know, rid of a lot of those things, that will help to improve the area. Obviously, it's going to take people going down and feeling safe there. I mean, I think the fair's done a great job of turning that around because of the increased security that they've had.
Right.
And because you and I both know times that there was no chance that we were going to go to the fair after the sun went down. On any year. But now, I mean, it's a safe place. We haven't heard anything negative in years.
Yeah, Russell Adams was in talking about that very thing. And by the way, they opened up Thursday.
Oh,
exciting.
That's fun. It looks great out there.
It does.
Yeah.
I love the fair.
Yeah.
Jeff Luce in for Aaron. Jeffrey, Dr. Sado going to be joining us after the news, top of the hour. 1017 FM, 710 Kiel. .1017 FM, 710 Kiel, and on the free Kiel app, you can take us anywhere you go. Mike and McCarty, Jeff Luce in for Aaron, and on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline this morning, Dr. Jeffrey Sado from LSUS joining us, political science professor. Thank you, Dr. Sado. Appreciate you joining us this morning.
Sure.
We're talking about the Louisiana Senate has voted to push back the 2026 election dates, hopefully waiting on the U.S. Supreme Court and their decision on the congressional lines. What say you? Is this a good idea?
Well, you know, I mean, it, I guess it kind of depends. The special session costs money, a potential change in election dates is going to cost money. At the same time, if the court rules early enough, then, and it rules the way that apparently we looked at the arguments when the case was heard, not only a couple of weeks ago, but also earlier this year, it's probably going to end up invalidating the current map, and they'll need a new map. So, you know, what price you pay to be in compliance with the Constitution.
Now, the Supreme Court, could they actually issue a new map, or would they turn it back to the Louisiana legislators?
Yeah, no, the court doesn't get involved in drawing their own maps. It would have to go back to the legislature. Again, though, it depends on how early it happens. If it happens too late, so to speak, in the process, then there's this precedent that the court established almost 20 years ago that basically says we go with the old map for another couple years, and you know, you fix it in the interim. The reason why they do this is because if you have these changes too late to when an election, relative right. to when an election is going to occur, then it just creates a lot of chaos and administrative headaches. So they'll actually tolerate an unconstitutional map for that reason.
Is there any indication on a Supreme Court decision? Do you hear any rumblings?
No. If we go by history, it takes like last year when the court heard a handful of cases in October. It took on average about 4 months for the ruling to come out. The longest is about 5 months. A couple came out in a couple weeks, but they were pretty different cases. Not rather big and complicated as this one is. So this is probably going to take longer. And if we look at the 4 months, assuming that's the average, then that would be right about the time that the date changes are going, if they're made, and they're very highly likely to be made, that's about when they would kick in. So it'd be kind of right on the borderline.
Yeah, because they're looking, the elections are scheduled for April 18th and May 30th, and that would move them to May 16th and June 27th.
Yeah, they're basically adding a month or so onto these. And so, yeah, everything kind of gets kicked forward a month from that. So qualifying would be mid-February, and again, if the average from last year held, that's about when the court would be deciding the case. So, of course, then the legislature had to get in this special session and quickly draw a map. And they probably had a little more leeway than that because there's some administrative rulings that the Department of State can make in terms of the elections. So, for example, they might be able to shorten the petition gathering window, which actually will be longer this way, about a month longer, but they might be able to shorten that on the other end a little bit. So there might be a little more leeway than that, but it'd be cutting it close to if the average holds up, it'd be cutting close to getting a map out in time to be able to qualify constitutionally.
Do you feel like there are some long term ramifications if they do extend this?
Certainly. I mean, it could cause a totally different map in 2026. Than what we have right now, and the map that comes out of that almost certainly would not have two majority-minority districts out of the six. Most likely would have one. So, not only would we have different representation, obviously, but in the larger scheme of things, who knows, the election for the House may be so close that maybe one seat makes a difference. So could go down to that, could decide entirely the balance of power in the House of Representatives.
Okay, I've brought this up, and I've been told how stupid I am. I don't need to be told. But when you look at that congressional district map, Dr. Jeffrey Sado from LSUS, it's ridiculous going from South Shreveport all the way to Baton Rouge in a zigzag pattern. Why can't we just take a line down the center of the state and then horizontal lines and create, what is it, six different districts? And create them in that way, and whatever the population is, those are the representations. Why can't we do it that way?
There's some complications.
I know. I'm oversimplifying it, but...
Yeah, for one thing, the tolerance is... You have these incredibly small tolerances in terms of population deviations. They're generally in the single digits. So we're talking about basically 4.3 million people, and you have to draw six districts that basically vary by no more than 9 people in the size in each district. So that's, you know, one thing that makes it complicated immediately. And then, you know, all sorts of other things. There are a number of traditional, what we might call traditional principles of reapportionment. So, for example, the one that's really probably going to kill this map is they totally busts up communities of interest. I mean, you take and divide the Baton Rouge into 3 different districts, Shreveport into 2, and so on. And I mean, the people that are living right next door to each other in large urban areas are getting put in different districts. So you know, there are a number of things you have to follow like that. And so it does make it a much more complicated than just simply taking like urban areas and emanating outwards and drawing. So, it can be complicated. And really what the court's trying to do with this decision is to try to balance out. There's on the one side, you say, well, you can't use race as a preeminent criterion unless there's some really compelling reason to do it, like some very current discrimination going on. But at the same time, you have to prevent that kind of discrimination from going on in the drawing of district lines. And so the Supreme Court is, I think what they're going to do with this case is they're going to take some fairly vague and nebulous rules that are in conflict with each other when you push them to certain extremes, and they're going to, in essence, create more rules that will try to kind of be an umpire in terms of, well, all right, here's where the lines need to go. So adding some more specificity to it that is an attempt to try to prevent these conflicts, which you probably can't entirely prevent.
I'm even more confused now, Dr. Sano.
Well, that's why these consultants for reapportionment make hundreds of dollars an hour. You make hundreds of dollars an hour testifying in court about this too. So
right. So what are we know that the part of the argument is that it's a racial component, that it was drawn strictly to create a black district, and what other criteria is the Supreme Court looking at? Or is that going to be the main criteria?
Well, it's probably going to be one criterion. You know, there have been some suggestions that they would the decision would get rid of that portion of the Voting Rights Act that allows race to be used in any way to draw district lines. They're probably not going to go that far, but they probably are. What they're going to do is put a lot more limitations on how it can be used. Again, really, the jurisprudence is such that you can really only use it in unfettered fashion if there's direct evidence that discrimination is going on now. And what kind of how the law has evolved or the way the courts have been using it is that even kind of like hypothetical situations, even if you can't prove there's an intent to discriminate, in the past, the jurisprudence said, all right, well, intent doesn't matter. If we think that's the practical effect of it, then we're going to declare it unconstitutional. And I think the court's going to try to move away from that and try to establish a standard of, well, we've got to show some intent right here and right now, not what happened 60 years ago or whatever, but what's going on right now. And if you can't find that, then we're not going to allow race to be used in the drawing of district lines.
Well, as Henry Blake in MASH said, clear as mother's milk.
There you go.
Yeah. So, but basically, we're in a waiting game to see what the Supreme Court is going to do. Dr. Sano, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, sure.
And talk to you again soon.
Sure.
Jeff Luce in for Aaron McCarty, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Big Stories of the Day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
One oh one seven FM 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty. And by the way, I was talking earlier this morning about the incident. Let me say now that took place in the Red River District, and I said shooting. That I misspoke. Not a shooting. It was a fight. In fact, coming up here in about 10-15 minutes or so, Corporal Chris Bordelon, spokesperson for the Shreveport Police Department, is going to join us and tell us about what happened there. And it's not unexpected.
No, unfortunately.
But after all the discussion that we've been talking about, the development that's going on, and statistically, downtown Shreveport is very safe.
It is.
This wasn't one of those, like random act of violence, some carjacking or something.
No.
This was apparently, well, we're going to get more details, but apparently people that knew one another that ended up getting in a fight, and it just went south.
Ugh. Yeah, it's kind of frustrating when stuff like this, you know, takes the headlines.
When you're trying to change the image.
Right, you're trying like hell to change the image and get people downtown and get people excited about stuff.
Because we had Cedric Glover, former mayor of Shreveport and DDA director, on a few days ago, and we were talking about this very thing. And statistically, downtown is safe, but perception is reality.
Right.
And right. So, unfortunately, that's the perception, that it's dangerous and people don't want to go downtown. But that's actually sad, and they're missing a lot.
Right. I used to hang out downtown all the time. From when I was a teenager at 516 Soundstage.
Well, see, that's why people aren't going, because you were down there. Yeah,
I was the one causing all the problems. you might not be wrong.
we have heard from Erin. She's working from home. She's doing great. Thank you for those who have asked. She got approval late last week to work from home for a week, and she's even getting out and about. She did find out, even though you feel better, you still have to take it easy.
Yeah,
your body still needs to recover.
Yeah, you gotta.
She had a procedure done last week, so she's been recovering. But everything, all reports are just great.
Yeah,
and so we're excited to have her back.
Very excited.
Day after tomorrow, she's scheduled to be back in studio on Thursday. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Corporal Chris Bordelon will be joining us talking about this the fight that went on downtown and what's next. All that more. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Micah McCarty, Erin, be back on Thursday. I came across, this is hilarious. We talked about laws that are strange, but when you start talking, we've talked about food combinations, first of all.
Right.
Like peanut butter and pickle sandwiches.
Right, right.
Which, by the way, are great. I love peanut butter and pickle.
I like both of those. I've never had them together.
If you use like sweet relish, it's good.
Okay.
It's kind of like a jelly, you know. But bread and butter pickles, the slices. Yeah. But I thought this was hilarious. There were some laws. These are laws that are on the books in different states. Like in Alabama, it's illegal to walk down the down the street with an ice cream cone in your back pocket.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. That makes sense.
Now, the genesis of this is it dates back to horse thieving days. Sneaky riders used to put the ice cream in their back pocket to lure horses away without technically stealing them.
That's pretty smart, actually.
Well, he just followed me home.
I don't know why he followed me. Yeah.
In California, the law is actually on the books. Any frog that participates in a frog jumping contest or dies or is killed may not be eaten and must be destroyed. Wow. I don't get that.
I don't know.
Are you supposed to eat them live?
You got me.
Speaking
of the wording on that alone confused me.
Speaking of pickles, peanut butter and pickles, a pickle isn't officially a pickle in Connecticut unless it bounces.
All right. Okay.
This is hilarious.
We're bouncing pickles now.
Now, here's my favorite. In Georgia, on the books, it is illegal to eat fried chicken with utensils.
I support that one 100%.
You gotta
put that one to a vote. I'm voting on it.
You gotta use your hands. I love it.
See somebody eating fried chicken with a knife and fork. That would boil my blood.
Yeah, no kidding. Best fried chicken in the world was my grandmother's. Just bar none. Speaking of laws, Corporal Chris Bordelon joining us here coming up after the break. We're gonna talk about the fight that took place downtown in the Red River District. 101.7 FM, 710 KEO, Mike and McCarty.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEO.
Well, over the weekend, an event took place in downtown Shreveport at the Red River District. I misspoke earlier. It was not a shooting. I apologize. It was a fight. Corporal Chris Bordelon on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline with the Shreveport Police Department joining us. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. Thanks for jumping on with us this morning, correcting my ignorant self. Tell us what did happen in the Red River District.
Well, what we first noticed is we began to get a lot of messaging on social media in regards to an incident that had occurred early Saturday morning, Friday leading into Saturday morning. And what a lot of the messages depicted was that their female had been injured in a fight in the downtown area. So that prompted Chief Smith to contact our Investigations Bureau and begin an investigation into the case. And what we can say kind of right now is that the early investigation shows us that these people did know each other, and there was some type of an argument that turned into a physical encounter resulting in the injuries to the woman. And it's a very unfortunate situation. However, you know, we do want to remind individuals this was, you know, an isolated incident. These people did know one another, and mm-hmm. this wasn't a random act of violence.
Exactly. That was a point that I did make earlier. It wasn't something random, a carjacking or something that people need to be worried about if they're just enjoying themselves downtown.
Exactly. And we're going to get to the bottom of it. Right now, it's a whole lot of information on social media. And, you know, both sides in this incident obviously believe that they were right. And ultimately, this is something that happens, unfortunately, when you involve grown-ups and adult beverages and late nights. You know, sometimes these are the type of things that can happen.
Now, Chris, I know this is an active investigation. Can you give us any details? Was it like a man and a woman, a domestic situation? Was it two women? I know there was one woman that was hurt, but what details can you share?
Well, what we know right now is that there was a woman that was injured. She did go to the hospital to receive some stitches. The instigation or what instigated the fight appeared to have been a disagreement between a man and a woman that were not together, and then another man stepped in and a fight ensued. And you know, how the woman was injured is still what we're working to investigate. You know, there's obviously people on both sides of this incident that have their version of the truth. And that's kind of the job of the police department, is to take all the information that we can, put it together, and determine exactly what happened.
Now, there are business owners that a businessman witnessed this weekend fight. And so now they're calling for more police in the Red River District. Is that something that can be addressed? I know the chief, is he looking at this?
Yes, Chief, we are aware. We've been seeing it. this is a good thing. We're seeing good crowds in our downtown area, and that is the ultimate goal, is we want people to come to downtown. We want them to feel safe. So our job as police officers in the police department is to make them feel safe in doing so. And Chief Smith spent several hours in meetings yesterday working on some plans. And it comes to just allocation of resources. You know, there's no secret that, you know, the police department is looking to hire more officers. We need more officers. So we need to reallocate some resources to that downtown area. And also some of our technology that we have will probably be placed in strategic locations to see if we can deter some of these acts like this. But there's another thing that we have to, you know, take into account here, is that when you do have grown-ups drinking late at night, there is going to be conflict. It doesn't matter where the situation is. You can turn on social media and see fights at Chuck E. Cheese and Disney World. And we need to understand that when there's going to be grown-ups drinking alcohol, there's going to be conflict, and we need to do everything we can to hold those individuals accountable. But we have to be realistic as a society and as a city.
Now, Chris, talking with Chris Bordelon, spokesperson for the Shreveport Police Department, all I see was Red River District. Where did this take place? Was it a particular club?
Well, the video that we've seen circulating on social media takes place under the bridge in that Red River District. Okay. However, you know, the initial information we got is that the original verbal altercation occurred possibly inside of a club and then spilled out into the outside. And that's what we'll work to get to the bottom of and determine, you know, what the initial incident was and what caused this, and see if we can hold those individuals accountable.
Now, this came up in the city council meeting as well, and one councilman suggested metal detectors for that area, and another said cover charge on the weekends. How would you initiate a cover charge in the Red River District, and where would that money go?
Well, and I think they're doing some really good outside of the box thinking, and this is all with the idea of growing our downtown. Now, I think specifically what they're referring to is having like one point of entry on the Clyde Fant side and then one point of entry on the Commerce side into that Red River District area, mm-hmm, under the bridge.
Right.
And that would be the area that you would have to go through metal detectors and possibly pay a cover charge. And you know, obviously, we're a long way away from that. But if we continue to grow our downtown area, we're going to have to make some decisions as to how we can control those areas of egress and how we can control, you know, some of the people coming into the downtown area. Because ultimately what we're looking for is for people to come downtown and visit the businesses and spend money in the businesses. What we don't want is it for it to be a place where people congregate on parking lots and they're not really adding anything to the downtown economy, and they're mostly just down there to cause problems.
Well, and we talked before about the glory days of the Shreve Square area and what happened there. And I've talked with people about that, and they say, well, eventually what happened was the bad element took over the area and ran out the you know, the party goers. And it kind of destroyed the area.
And that's an unfortunate thing, because we're seeing that across our city. You know, as our crime numbers continue to dwindle, it is the few people that are troublemakers that continue to commit acts of violence in our city that perpetuate what we're finding is a false narrative. The vast majority of the citizens of Shreveport want to live here and work here and want to go about and just be normal members of society. But there is always a small portion of society that does not want to conform to the laws and rules of our society. And that is what we have to work as law enforcement and as a community to get rid of.
Corporal Chris Bordelon, Shreveport Police Department, thanks. We appreciate you jumping on with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Chris, talk to you soon. 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL, Mike and McCarty.
Now breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
I think I know the answer to this, but do you expect a lot of trick-or-treaters at your house?
Well, no, for several reasons. I'm not going to.
The big sign says keep the hell away. Is that right?
Yeah. No, I'm going to be here doing Friday Football Frenzy on Halloween. So I'll be.
That's right. Halloween falls on a Friday night this year.
That's right. Now I'll be here till 10:30. So I won't know if they'll come by or not, but my porch light will be off.
Usually at our house, now he didn't make it last year, quite frankly, but Santa will be out front and he'll have actually Christmas music playing on the Bose speaker on the porch.
Christmas for Halloween. I like it.
Gives out candy canes.
Of course. What else would he give?
And the kids, after their initial shock, you know, they freak out at first. So what? Then they love it, obviously. And more, and parents will come up and go, oh, we want to get a picture. So this is our Christmas card.
Right. Yeah. Get an early, get the Halloween or the Halloween Christmas card out of the way early.
But there have been many Halloweens where Santa sweated his big fat behind off.
Oh, man. That's not going to be the case.
Going to be the case this year. It looks like it's going to be great. In fact, we're expecting rain today, and then the temperatures are going to drop. We're going to start getting down into the 40s. Woo-hoo. I think starting tomorrow night,
right.
Maybe not tonight, but starting tomorrow night. So by Friday, we should be getting some nice actual Halloween weather.
Yeah. I'm
so
excited.
I'm looking forward to that.
I feel like last year it was hot until mid-November.
Right. Ridiculous. What are you going to do?
Right. Yeah.
I had a point to that and I just went completely blank. But looking forward to that, although Santa won't be there this year either.
Yeah.
Won't be there this year.
Yeah.
We got plans. So not even going to be home.
Santa can't make Halloween plans every year. You know, he's got to be up there at the workshop and, you know, tending to the elves.
But now, when you trick-or-treated, I remember as a kid, we trick-or-treated as kids, put on the costumes. And I remember going home and changing costumes and going back out.
Yes.
We lived in Southern Gardens, way out in South Bossier. At that time was the southernmost subdivision. It's now in the middle of town, but at that time, and so it was a small subdivision. This is, I'm talking late 60s, and you knew everybody, but we would change masks and go back out. But what age would you say is inappropriate to go trick-or-treating?
Anything after 13 is too old.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Anything. If it's after 13, I mean, I say that because at 13 I was being a hellion and doing things I wasn't supposed to do.
You know, 17-year-olds come up with a backpack draped around their neck,
right,
on their chest, just unzipped open, trick-or-treat. Dude, come on.
If they have a costume and they have a good story, you know, if they have a good story, like, oh, my little brother's homesick, even though that one's played out, I'll still.
Right. Or it's for my nephew.
Right.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I don't believe you, but here.
Here, take it. But if you don't have a costume on, it's like, and no, only the little kids get the candy. So.
Right. Yeah, well, anyway, so we're not even going to be there, so I'm not going to worry about it.
Right.
But Aaron will be back on Thursday. The food bank needs your help. We're going to talk about that coming up tomorrow. Jeff Luce will be in studio again tomorrow morning. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.